Pet parents, get ready, because this week, Dr. Holly Brown is here to guide us through the importance of annual lab work for your furry friends. From early detection to preventative care, lab work shows us what's going on inside your pet. You're going to learn all about that today on the Family Pet Podcast. Welcome into the Family Pet Podcast, the podcast for curious pet parents, where we believe the more you know about pet healthcare, the better pet parent you can be. I'm your host, Michael Shirley, joined by my co-host, as always, Stephen. Welcome in, brother.
Hello, Michael.
I'm still not used to having you beside me because I'm trying to record, and I'm like kinking my neck in this weird way.
We've got to get the longer cord so that we can do different.
Well, we're making progress. So as you're listening to this on your favorite podcast platforms, just be advised that if you've always wondered what Stephen and I look like, you can now find us on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search for the Family Pet Podcast, and it will pull us up.
Nobody wonders what we look like.
Well, you know, maybe somebody out there does.
That's a poor.
We have voices.
poor existence.
We have faces for radio, but now we're on YouTube as well. But we are joined. The thing that makes the Family Pet Podcast successful, Stephen,
it is not us.
It is that we are getting better and better. We've been doing this almost 3 years now, and we're getting better at stopping to talk, like us stopping talking and letting our guest talk. And not only do we let the guest talk, but we are bringing in fantastic guests. We're continuing that with today. We have Dr. Holly Brown from Antech Diagnostics. She is going to be talking to us today about lab work. So, Dr. Brown, welcome into the Family Pet Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, Stephen, when's the last time you had some lab work done?
I had lab work at my annual physical where you get the
5 years ago.
They give you the no.
You know, you're about to be 50. Do you get special lab work at 50?
By the time this
is released,
Dr. Brown's laughing because there's a certain piece of work that they do.
Oh, yeah, what?
I have not scheduled.
All right, that's enough of this. Let's let the guest talk. No more talking to Stephen about special lab work. Dr. Brown, welcome into the podcast. We're excited to have you, and I hear that you're excited to talk about lab work.
Always excited to talk about lab work.
What is, when we talk about our pets, not Stephen, the old man, when we talk about pets, what are the most common lab work orders that our vets may recommend that our pet parents are going to learn about today?
Yeah, so as you mentioned to Stephen, when we talk about our wellness visits, right, I think that our pet parents may be used to hearing about doing fecal testing, right? Fecal testing for GI parasites. And then a lot of times a blood test for our vector-borne diseases. So mosquitoes transmit heartworm disease, and we screen for that, as well as some of our tick-transmitted diseases. Those have become, I think, fairly standard into our protocols for wellness care, that we run those tests often during the appointment, right? While the owner is there, the pet parent is there with their pet. But I also think we want to expand that thought process and think about all the other diagnostics that we run, and not just in periods of sickness, right? So those pet parents who have had the unfortunate experience of having a sick pet have been at the veterinarian where they talk about how we figure out what's going on, right? How do we look, how do we get more objective information about the clinical signs that they're reporting? And then they talk about doing a CBC or hematology and looking at the blood cells. Or looking at the chemistry values, right? Or looking at a urinalysis. Those are other tests that we do that I think our pet parents are used to thinking about in times of sickness. But I think it's also really worthwhile. There's a lot of value in running those tests during periods of wellness as well. Get some baseline values, right? Mm-hmm. That we can trend.
Yeah, my wife, Dr. Shirley, always talks about blood work is the internal exam for a pet. So she can do the external exam and do the physical, but the blood work is what tells her what's going on inside the pet.
I love that. I've never heard that, but if it's okay with her, Dr. Shirley, I would like to say that sometimes too. I think that is great. Another wonderful quote comes from Dr. Dennis DiNicola, also a fantastic clinical pathologist. And he talks, says, animals can't hide their objective data, right? They can hide so much information, you know, especially a cat and in a practice setting. right? They're going to hide every disease as long as they can, right? Mm-hmm. They don't want anything invasive done. They'd rather be left alone. But when we want to get an objective evaluation of how a pet is doing, if their behavioral change is just behavioral, right? Or if it's actually because of underlying disease, or if we want to get a status, right? What are they at 10 years old? What does it look like in my pet, right? What early signs of disease might I be able to find? And then we look inside, right? We look at the blood cells, we look at the chemistry, and we look for some objective data to help us qualify their status of health.
You mentioned some, you mentioned the basics, like the fecal, the urinalysis, and just vector-borne test. And then you mentioned some more specific things. You used an acronym, or I guess it's not an acronym, an abbreviation, CBC. Tell our curious pet parents, what is a CBC and what does it tell us?
So the CBC, and actually it's one of my favorite diagnostic tests. So the CBC stands for the complete blood count. And so when we're talking about the complete blood count, it's hematology is the area of science that we're looking at here. And it's looking at the red blood cells in the blood, the white blood cells that are circulating in the blood, and our platelets, which are actually a cell fragment that's circulating in the blood. So we talk about the CBC or the complete blood count as if it's one test, right? But it's often reporting, you know, like 20 to 24 different variables of the cellular components of the blood. It tells us so much about when a patient has low red blood cells, we call that anemia, right? And most of our pet parents have probably heard about that just even in the human world, right? Hearing about an anemic patient and anemia or having a low number of red blood cells is often one of our most sensitive, while non-specific, right? One of our most sensitive signs that something is going on in the body, right? We stop prioritizing making red blood cells because our pet is sick with something else going on, right? It's a really common finding in our sick patients. And then in our white blood cells, we get to learn about signs of inflammation, immune stimulation, different leukemias we can see. We can see a stress response. There's different patterns in those white blood cells, as well as morphology changes of those cells, right, that we can pick up on to be really sensitive in detecting an allergic response, you know, a fungal infection, a parasitic response. There's just so many things in those white blood cells. And then the third component is looking at those platelets, those cell fragments, and they have to do with our blood clotting ability, right? And so we can see, we look at those signs before our patient goes to surgery, make sure that our platelet numbers are adequate, but we'll see them decrease in a variety of different processes, from infectious causes like our tick-borne diseases to sometimes if we have hidden within the body like a splenic mass on the spleen or the liver, one of our organs, if there's some bleeding within that mass, often those platelet numbers will go down. And so we can't observe this externally with our patient. We see those platelet numbers dropping some below a normal healthy reference interval. Then we start investigating further.
Now, you have gone to explain quite a bit on the CBC. What is it telling us? What do the fecal tests tell us? What does a urinalysis tell us when you break those down?
Perfect. So on fecal testing, we are looking for, we're testing the poop, right? We're looking in the poop to see if there's any signs that there's intestinal parasites. And because if there's parasites in the GI tract, they're going to shed their ova, right? Their eggs, they're going to shed them in the feces or sometimes fragments of the actual parasite themselves, right? So we will look for the indications in the poop that there's GI parasitism. And we see with those GI parasites that it's really important both for that particular pet's health, right, that we optimize their health by keeping them free of internal parasites. But a lot of the parasites, the eggs that they shed are actually zoonotic to people as well, right? So it's a sort of a public health obligation that we make sure the poop is clear of these shedding ova, right, that could be infectious to people in the environment as well. So that's fecal testing, right? And it's actually gotten a lot more intense in how we look at that, right? There's a lot more options. So traditionally our fecal testing is done with a flotation. We actually mash up some of the poop, right? And in a special solution that causes those ova, right? Or oocysts to float up to the top, and we capture them on a slide, right? And we look it under the microscope to see them. And sometimes we have to do special tests like centrifuge it or use different strengths and solutions, right? To get to see the ova that we're looking for. But then they invented more tests where we could actually look at antigens, looking at proteins from some of those, right? We don't need to wait till the intermittent shedding of eggs, we can more sensitively find just pieces of protein that come from those
parasites. And that's like where the parasite is just releasing maybe their hormones is it more than just that? Like they're releasing their scent.
Their essence.
I don't know. What is it? What is it, yeah. Dr. Brown, that they're releasing into the bloodstream that we're testing for?
Well, the technology picks up on a lot of different things, right? So we actually just look for what can be a biomarker even sometimes, okay. right? So often it's a protein fragment of something it produces. When we look at, going beyond fecal testing, but, we think about, we'll go into heartworm testing later and talk a little bit about that. But antigens that's released from it, that's just saying we know that it's present in the intestinal tract, and it may be pieces of the body even that have come up.
Can you define antigen? Because we talk about that a lot, and I don't, let's educate our pet parents out there on what does that word mean, antigen?
Yeah, so an antigen is usually, it's a protein target that we can make antibodies, or the body has made antibodies too. So it's a way that we can test the immune system, right? And we test the immune system usually in our patients to say, are you making the antibody to a certain protein or antigen that came from the infectious agent? I'm not sure. Summarize
that? So the parasite is in our body or in our pet's body, and it is foreign to our pet, and our pet's body senses that foreign parasite, and then it releases its own attack mechanism, its own little soldiers out there to kill the foreign invader.
Yeah, that's what, right. And, so that's antigen antibody complexing, right? So an antigen is something from the usually the intruder. We're talking about infectious agents that's recognized as foreign, right? And we can take advantage of that by either looking for the antigen itself, right, by capturing it on our tests that have the antibody. So that when we look at pieces of that feces, we can actually see that it sticks to it and knows that it's in there. Or we take advantage of it by looking at our patient's antibodies to say that your patient's body has seen them, right?
That's pretty cool.
There's one more advancement also in fecal testing where they do PCR.
Yeah.
So that might be, unfamiliar to our pet parents, but that's looking at genetic material.
And what does PCR stand for?
Yeah, polymerase chain reaction. And it's a series of reactions that we can take advantage of to actually amplify or make multiple copies of small, small fragments of DNA that we usually use to look for infectious agents. And so it's sometimes hard to, if we're looking in the blood, especially, or in the poop, we're looking for, if we look at eggs, like a big sort of almost macroscopic thing, like an egg, a very larger size thing that we can see under the microscope, sure. But, we'll get those macroscopic things. We have to wait for those worms to be in there, to be mature enough to have males and females, right? To get a pregnant female to release an egg that only happens some of the time, right? Intermittently. Right. But we can get a lot more sensitive and actually just say, do we have any, if they have a parasite burden in there, any fragments, any small fragments of the genetic material of that parasite, right? We can capture very sensitively. Use that laboratory test, that PCR, polymerase chain reaction, used in a lot of benchtop labs, right? And then amplify little bits of DNA till it makes a loud enough signal that we can find it in there. So it's a very, very sensitive way. Yeah.
All right. So we did poop. That's a lot on poop. What about the urinalysis?
Yeah. And so I think yes, there is always more. And the urinalysis, I think what's really important to talk about is I think in veterinary medicine, it sometimes gets undervalued and it's certainly underutilized. Probably our pet parents have talked more to the veterinarian about running those other tests, a CBC in the blood or another blood test called the chemistry panel. But I think that we don't always pair urine with it. And I think it's really important because in the urine sample, it's a wonderful window. It's extruded from the body, but a wonderful window to be able to look at what's going on in the body. Right? So we talk about, first there's some visual characteristics of the urine that can tell us whether something's abnormal or not. We can look at the concentration of the urine and that tells us about kidney function and hydration status. And then we can look at all the chemical constituents of the urine. We use those dipsticks that people may have seen, the chemical reaction pads that are adapted from humans, right? That look at all these different things. Is the liver functioning normally, right? Is our glucose metabolism normal? So many metabolic processes. It looks at so many different functions of the body to make sure that those are all appropriate, right? Helps us interpret the rest of the lab work. And then furthermore, then we look at actually the foreign constituents of the urine. Are there red blood cells in there? Is there any inflammation in there with white blood cells? Are there any atypical cells that suggest there may be cancer somewhere, or casts, which form when the kidneys are diseased? There's so much information in sometimes merely a few drops of urine.
Right. I was at, or Stephen and I both were at VMX here recently, which is a very, very large veterinary conference, largest in the world.
25,000 people.
Yeah, it was nuts. I was walking around and went to the different lab testing booths and was amazed at the use of artificial intelligence to take samples, collect them at the vet office, and then run that test in-house. So we could take a fecal, spin it down, take a few drops out of there, put it on a slide, and then put it in the machine that scans it and takes pictures and counts the fecal eggs in that whole – it was amazing. So it talked about in-house versus reference labs. What is the difference and the advantages to running those tests in-house or at the vet office – versus sending them out to a reference lab?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's a lot of factors that come into play that decides whether we're going to run lab work in the clinic or send to the reference lab, right? And some of them are logistics about the pet, right? And the pet parent. And it may be that they have, they can't wait around for the results. It may be that the patient's very sick and we need some immediate results. It may be that, the pet parent or the pet's anxious in the room and they're just going to get the sample and let them go home because that's stressful to everybody. So there's like some time and some behavioral characteristics that can come into play there, an expectation of the pet parent, right? I'd like some answers now. I'm very worried, right? Those can help drive some of it. There's also the variety of tests that are available, right? So as you mentioned, we've brought a lot to the in-clinic testing lab. Right? So much expertise has now come in clinic with getting to use both really advanced technologies that include AI, right? As well as access to sometimes scanning some of these samples and getting consultations from specialists, even when you're in clinic.
Yep.
But then the reference lab really has the whole repertoire of cases of abilities to run every test that you could want, really. You know, it has all the advanced diagnostics and it has a higher end of quality control as well. Right. So there's any question to some of the results we're getting in clinic, sometimes we need the expertise of the reference lab, right? Both to confirm an abnormality, but maybe to augment that testing, right? With some more advanced endocrine testing or some other specialization that we want to put on that.
And you mentioned earlier about pets going into surgery. We need to run those tests in-house because we're not, if we find out that platelet counts are low, we're not going to move forward with the surgery. So,
yes. And it depends, but I think different clinics might do it differently though, because if certainly any emergency surgery, surgery,
yeah.
Right. But then depending on how, the practice is set up, and where they use the time with their technicians and how well staffed their lab is, et cetera, it may be worthwhile on a planned surgery to come in earlier and get your lab work drawn and sent to the reference lab, right? Yeah. So everyone does it a little bit differently depending on a lot of these different factors that play into each and every case, right, in each and every exam room.
So those are kind of discussions we talked about, maybe an urgency or an importance is not the right word, but just a sense of urgency. Mm-hmm. But as our listeners are listening to this and are saying, hey, I want to get some lab work for my pet, when should they do that? What in the pet's life cycle, when should they do all of these things that you've been describing?
And we are fortunate that we do get some guidance from AHA, the American Animal Hospital Association, does give some guidance based on age of our pet, of what their sort of recommendations may be. I mean, in my mind, I want lab work all the time, right? And I'm not just saying that because I'm a clinical pathologist.
I was going to say that the listeners out there are like, yeah, of course, the doctor says that she can run that.
But in truth, they're my own pets, right? I mean, I want it when they're very, very young to recognize anything congenital or hereditary, right? I want to know what normal is for my pet early on, right? Especially before that first surgical, the spay or neuter, right? I want to make sure that my liver is okay to handle the medications. The kidneys were made okay to handle the heart, you know, no sign of any abnormalities, right? And platelets, inflammation, all that stuff, right? Before even that first surgery, it's often done at 6 months of age. So there's a baseline that I want then. And then as we probably in young adulthood at my annual exam, right? So I think we get used to screening the fecal testing and the vector-borne disease testing. But I also think finding out where your patient's values are in health is very, very valuable.
Right.
So I think sometimes we underplay or undervalue normal results. Right. So we have a pet owner come in.
That is when somebody might say, well, I spent this money and it didn't even show anything. No, it showed what normal is. Yeah. It gives us the baseline. So
yes. What you paid for is to find out your liver and kidneys are functioning okay. You're absorbing fine through your intestine. Your pancreas is intact. You have no urinary tract infection. You have no sign of inflammation. You're not, right. I mean, I think if we can spend the time reviewing those results with the pet parents to show them, you know, what they just paid for, right? All the value that they got. And understanding that when we're interpreting lab work and we get a value for each of these things we're measuring, we assess it as normal versus abnormal based on whether or not that value falls within an established reference interval, right? So we have these reference intervals that say, you know, normally a patient's red cell count should be between X and Y, right? And that's established over, let's say for dogs, maybe 50, maybe 100 dogs, right? Different breeds, sizes, ages, right? Everything from a, you know, 1-year-old female spayed Chihuahua through like an 8-year-old Great Dane, you know, male intact Great Dane, right? They're almost different species, right?
Yeah, right.
So inherently, those reference intervals of health are going to be very wide to accommodate the variety of pets that we see, right? The variety of breeds we're going to see, et cetera. But for an individual patient, that's very insensitive to detect abnormalities. Right? Because it's a wide reference interval. It's like a field goal, right? And pretty easy to fit the ball through. And so if we can get our individual patient, a pet can come in and we can get a baseline data when they are healthy at 1 year of age, 2 year of age, right? Then we can see what's normal for them. And it's much more narrow now. So then at years 3, 4, 5, 6, if we do annual lab work, right, through their mature ages, now as those start to trend, in the chemistry, some of the values we look at for albumin or creatinine, different things, as they start to trend high or low, we start to pick up on something much earlier, right? Yeah. Before they're sick, right? And so there's really a lot of value in running those tests when they are clinically healthy. And I would do it annually until they get to be even more mature. And I'd probably be going twice a year. You know, once they're over 7 or 8 years of age, again, to more sensitively and earlier detection of abnormalities so that we can intervene before they get to clinical sickness, right?
What a great information. If you have time, I think we're coming up on the end of what we try to keep our time for the show, but I have more questions to ask. So would you stick around? Can we do an extended episode with you?
I would love to.
Okay. So for you curious pet parents out there, we're going to break this. We're going to keep our conversation going with Dr. Brown. But let's end this episode, because I know you got at least one fun fact to share with our listeners. So this is the time in our show where we ask you to share with our curious pet parents at home a piece of information that will help them be a little smarter, to help them win trivia night, or at least impress their friends and family at dinner. So, Dr. Brown, what is your fun fact for our curious pet parents?
Okay, one fun fact I was thinking, and again, probably best for trivia maybe, but just for a sort of global understanding, might be the word leukemia and understanding the origin of that word.
Okay.
So people may be familiar with hearing leukemia either in the human world or on one of their pets and not know what it means. And so I think it's fun to break it down because of how it came about. So leuko means white, right? And emia is of the blood, right? And so it's increased white blood cells, right, in the blood. And that it's not just as basic as that, though, because before they could look under the microscope and see that those were white blood cells, they used to look at blood by spinning it down and observing the visual characteristics of it. And when there's a lot more white blood cells, because you've made too many white blood cells, and in this case, we're talking about a cancerous production of white blood cells. Excuse me. So they're making a lot of white blood cells in the blood. When they spun it down, the white layer of all of those white blood cells was really, really thick in the blood. And they, the you know, scientists used to look at that and say, what's making the blood so white? So they call it white blood. And it's because there's actually this cancer of the white blood cells is making them make way too many of them.
That's fascinating.
I learned something new.
White blood.
White blood.
White blood.
Well, that is a. I think that will help somebody win trivia night. That's good. It definitely makes them feel smarter at family dinners. So.
Yeah. I can impress my family.
Steve's going to bring that out tonight at dinner.
Yeah. Michael's going to be like, yeah, it means white blood.
Duh. Well, Dr. Brown, thank you for agreeing. We're gonna continue this episode. So you curious pet parents out there, go back, listen to this one, play it back. Get ready for next week. We'll continue part two with Dr. Brown, and we're going to talk a little bit more about some specifics related to lab testing. And until then, stay curious. Family Pet Podcast is a podcast for curious pet parents, where we believe the more you know about pet health care, the better pet parent you can be. The Family Pet Podcast is a production of Family Pet Health, PLLC, and is recorded in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. The statements made as a part of this show should not be taken as an establishment of any form of a veterinary-client-patient relationship. All comments are for entertainment and educational purposes only, and you should reach out to your local veterinary partner before taking any action on anything that you've heard here today. We hope that you will share this podcast with a friend, and it would mean so much to us if you would take a moment to leave a review and follow wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Show notes, links, and videos to accompany today's show can be found at thefamilypetpodcast.com.